There is an organization from Gauteng, they say they want 5 minutes. They have their presentation, it's a single page. I want to give them 5 minutes just to go through their presentation quickly.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Adifele Mokokare. I represent an organization called Gauteng Land Restitution Committee. This organization was established in 2002, subsequent to the Karoo. Ours won't be a long presentation. We'll just try and focus.
Sorry, can you try to use the other mic? It seems to me that one is sort of having a lot of interference.
Thank you. As I said, my name is Adifele Mohokare. I represent an organization called the Gauteng Land Restitution Claims Committee, which was established in 2002.
I suggest you just continue, sir.
Okay, thank you. The Gauteng Land Restitution Claims Committee wish to take this opportunity to firstly thank the Minister for his efforts in actually putting the matter of reopening the restitution process. Firstly, to his organization, the ANC, and to Parliament. Secondly, we wish to extend our heartfelt gratitude to the ruling party for having resolved at the Amalgam Conference to reopen the restitution process so that millions of victims of forced removals who missed at the 31st December 1998 cut off date could have the opportunity to submit their claims as well. We also wish to thank the government and all those members of parliament who positively participated in the discussions that eventually led to the drafting of the bill that proposed the amendments to the Restitution of Land Rights Act 22 of 1994. The GLRCC wishes to submit the following for consideration in the final amendments to the bill. That Section 21E of the bill, the year 2018 be removed, because by the time the Act is promulgated, the cut-off date would have been moved forward. So instead of 2018 in Section 21E of the bill, that should be replaced by a date 5 years from the date of the promulgation thereof. That the turnaround time be within 18 months from the date of submission of the claim to the final settlement, because we do not want to see a repetition of what is happening now, because there are people that submitted their claims prior to the cutoff of 2018, and those people, those claims are still not settled today. That the fact that the restitution process is going to be opened be properly communicated to the public by means of all national media comprising newspapers, radios, televisions and billboards. But importantly, that workshops be organized to cater for those members of the public who cannot read nor have access to televisions, radios, newspapers, etc. That the date of the reopening must be announced before Parliament goes into recess for the elections, and that is very important, that date should be made out. We understand there are people who wouldn't want this bill to be promulgated into law, but we as the victims of forced removals, we accept and are very grateful for the government to propose that the restitution process be reopened. We also wish that this time around the restitution process be properly handled to include, hopefully, all those victims of forced removals under past racial laws in the state of December 1990 court of date, because we do not again want to see a repetition of people who would subsequently come along and said, we were not aware that there is a law that gives us the right to apply for restitution for our lost properties. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. I now give an opportunity to the Khiba National Conference of South Africa Chair, Honorable Chief Sisa Lefleur.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And thank you for the opportunity to speak, as I said earlier. I want to make use of this opportunity to stress why we feel that the Khoi San people and the Griqua people as part of that must be taken seriously and much more seriously than is the case at present. The 1913 cut-off date is indeed a huge obstacle for the Khoi and San people of this country. When this date was negotiated during CODESA, we made a presentation to CODESA to ask them to take in consideration the position of the Khoi and San people who were dispossessed long before 1913 of all their land. And I also want to stress here that the Khoi and San people were the first people in this country to be dispossessed of land and other even culture and traditions and all that. It was the previous president, Mandela, President Mbeki, all of them recognized that the Khoi and San people were the first people to bear the brunt of colonial oppression in this country, including dispossession of land. And up till now, the Khoi and San people were really not taken seriously when we deal with an issue so sensitive as the land reform and land restitution of this country. I'm sitting here today as a descendant of my grandfather, Lefleur, R.S. Lefleur the first paramount chief, Lefleur paramount chief of East Griqualand. And in 1898, he was jailed, he was brought from East Griqualand, and he was jailed in the Breakwater prison up here for the fact that he fought for the land rights of the Griqua people. And he was given 14 years hard labor in the Breakwater prison for that. The history of dispossession of Griqua people specifically in the Southern Free State, in the Northern Cape, in the along the west coast of the Western Cape, is well documented history. It is there and nobody can deny it because it is written down, it is documented, it is part of South Africa's actual history. And up till now, we face this attitude of not caring for the case of the Khoi and San. We were not taken seriously at CODESA with this piece of legislation, with this amendment bill. We are again not taken seriously because it is stated clearly that our case must be dealt with after the bill had been promulgated into an act. Then they will consider to also address the issue of the Khoi and San. So we come here today and we want to thank all the speakers here who supported the case of the Khoi and San people. And we really want to say thank you very much that you also come out in support of the fact that the Khoi San people's issues must also be addressed. So we feel that we want to make a plea here today, Mr. Chair, that the Khoi San people's right to claim ancestral land prior to 1913 must become part of this legislation and not be dealt with after this bill is being promulgated into an act. So we also say that if new claims must not be entertained, then what about the history of dispossession of Khoi San people's land in this country? How will government ever go ahead not taking the Khoi San people with them regarding the addressing of their land claims? Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Professor Alka? Members of the Kusnele Committee and other interested people, parties present. Just thank you very much for this opportunity, and my apologies for some of the technical glitches. I just want to indicate at the start that I'm not actually representing the university or my department as such, but I am speaking in my personal capacity and talking in terms of my extensive engagement with these issues in different capacities. And in that connection, I can refer to previous submissions and also interactions and discussions that I've been part of with members of the committee. So I'm hoping then to use this opportunity just perhaps to raise some new issues and to reflect on them in the light of the most recent version of the bill, and also the draft policy framework that I think has also been circulated, which I think is of the department, which is attempting to find a way through some of the very complex challenges that reopening the claims process has opened up and will bring with it, a number of which have already been identified. So just, I'm not planning to speak for long, but these are very complex issues, as we all understand, and actually do require very extensive thoughts and consideration and deliberation, and very often the evidence, etc., that's behind the statements is also requires scrutiny and being thought about. But nevertheless, how I've proposed to make my comments is just I have some introductory remarks, then making the argument that the current bill and the policy framework surrounding it, I think, is inadequate for dealing with our current context, and that's an argument that I have made in other contexts as well. I think there's an urgent need for us not to deny the need for redress, but to broaden our understanding of redress, and I have some comments on that. I then want to draw particular attention to the concerns that I think have been underrepresented in the discussions on the bill. Around the impact of and the dimension and scope and implications of urban change. I want to say touch on the issue of betterment, which I think can be better served through other mechanisms than through the restitution process, given the nature and the history of betterment and current conditions in the former Bantustan. Touch on some other concerns and just identify what I see as a serious tension within the policy.
just in terms of the introductory remarks, I really do want to preface very strongly that the concerns that I'm articulating are not driven by a disrespect for the history that's been talked about, although I think that history is often oversimplified. So the issue is not about the importance of redress for the past, but what that should mean and how best we achieve it in 2014, after 20 years of experimenting and working with and trying to deal with restitution in a particular format. And the question I'm posing then, which others pose as well, which I think is important to step back and think about, is restitution. Is the Restitution Act the only or the best vehicle for achieving the goals of justice and improved livelihoods for those who are currently excluded in terms of the Constitution, as has been pointed out by the previous speaker, but also current legislation and the way in which policy has been implemented? And it seems to me that I call it the policy framework, but the set of expectations around restitution mean that this program of government, of constitutionally mandated program, has been overburdened with often misplaced and contradictory expectations. So just to elaborate, or not to elaborate, but to point out some of the issues of concern around the context, and this is not obviously the time and place to really reflect on the history of the last 300 years, and more particularly the last 150 years, but to make the point that the Restitution Act is not the optimal vehicle to address the demands of the present. If you look at the way in which our society has changed, and many of the issues around land, overlapping claims, changes in the way in which different communities and societies function, aspirations, etc. And here I've just pointed to a number of them, including the extent and the reality of industrialization, of uneven urbanization, of nobility, the shift from an agrarian society, but also significant social changes, including around women's status, family rights, a rise along with an interest in communal rights and responsibilities, also a counter, if you like, or a parallel set of issues around individual rights, and also issues around the rise of interest in many segments of society in private property as well, so different forms of tenure. Also significant regional differences in terms of history and environment and current economy and demography. So we don't have a simple or uniform past or present. And then, as I think has been alluded to, the history of colonialism itself is not simply a history of dispossession, but also a history of creation of new sets of rights, including freehold rights, footprint tenure, permission to occupy, etc., all of which overlay each other in many complex ways. New forms of association as well, and in fact, in that process of industrialization, mobilization, and influx control, new layers of ancestral lands, if you like, and here I'm just pointing to the Mfengu, the history of Mfengu, which I could elaborate on if there was time. So as a result of this, I'm arguing the need to broaden our understanding of redress. At the moment, the conception of redress is extremely limited and really focused on rural land, and very reluctantly money through the Restitution Act coming from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform or through the Commission, and the importance of promoting a range of alternatives for different contexts, and I've listed a few, including the use of land redistribution, including tenure reform and strategically targeted investment in education, in housing, in health, etc. Also looking at rural small towns and their development and opportunities for people there historically dispossessed. I also wanted to make the point that I think in this current context, financial compensation for restitution claims is not necessarily an inferior option, which is the way in which it's being presented in policy. In terms of urban claims, I'm concerned that urban claims and their impact and the history within the current restitution process have not been fully thought about And in fact, the current discourse and discussion seems to really push them to the side. But of course, as we know, they have been, and you can expect them that they will be if the process is reopened, a very important dimension of restitution. And there are serious issues around dispossession and redress that need to be looked at in the urban context, which go beyond only those who have suffered under the Group Areas Act or urban relocation of townships. And I'm concerned that the current policy debate is very focused on the history of rural dispossession and the alignment of restitution with rural land reform and rural development priorities in terms of policy, and not suitably addressing and thinking about the challenges of urban claims and urban redress. And here I just wanted to make the point that the Restitution of Land Rights Act is concerned with redress for unjust, racially discriminatory acts without a geographic or a land use or an economic bias. And that it has to include rural and urban claims, and that's also why one needs to think about restitution more broadly. Just briefly to highlight some of the special challenges of urban claims. If the process is reopened, we can certainly expect that many of the claims that will be lodged will be urban. And I think the experience of restitution and grappling with urban claims over the past 20 years have highlighted some of the special challenges in the urban context. The issue of equitable redress, what that means in the urban context where land use and values and zoning and spatial and development planning, etc., have all changed dramatically, has been very taxing. There's also the question of how you prioritize legitimate restitution claims in terms of the Restitution Act in the urban context vis-a-vis people who have historically been excluded from the urban context. We did not have rights to lose in the urban context because of the operation of influx control, etc. There are also serious challenges in implementing urban restitution, in dealing with, by now, often very large, segmented claimant families where there can be particularly intergenerational tensions and different interests and priorities for the historic plot. Just some sense of the numbers, and these are sort of broad brush figures, but just to give an indication of the scale of the challenge. The Surplus People Project, if you add up their figures, which as you know deals with a fairly limited period, but the period of high apartheid, if you like, from 1962 to the early 1980s, if you add up the different categories of urban removals there, the Group Areas Act, the relocation of townships, and this was incomplete, but nevertheless the numbers of informal settlements that have been cleared, that have been quantified, one comes up with a figure in the region of 1.6 million removals. Now, of course, this does not mean individual claims, because those removals largely are counting individuals, sometimes more than once, but nevertheless individuals who would be clustered within families and households. So potentially one could argue that there are, and these are not exactly thumb sucks, but obviously they are estimates for the purpose of the discussion, perhaps 380,000 urban households in this particular period were affected in one way or other, were dispossessed. So potentially 280,000 urban family claims, which we have to compare with the figures I have of approximately 66,000 urban claims that were lodged. So obviously there's a huge shortfall. And one can anticipate, I think the reasons why the shortfall is in itself a topic for further discussion, it's less likely in the urban context that people did not know about, at the broad level, about restitution as a program. But nevertheless, I'm just wanting to sort of use the case of District 6 to highlight some of the potential problems of dealing with, of reopening the process. Here too, we know, the information is there, that far fewer claimants, people who were dispossessed of historic rights, actually lodged claims. The approximately 10,000 families perhaps were removed, whereas the number of claims that were lodged, according to figures in the Commission's annual report of 2000 and 2001, in other words, after the cutoff period for lodging claims, was somewhat over 2,000. So potentially there could be another 7,000. New James and District 6 alone. And I think all of us in this room are aware of the enormous challenges and difficulties that have surrounded the process of trying to find, bring closure, deal with the issues of redress and justice in District 6. So that currently we urgently need legislation and a policy framework that protects and advances the fragile achievements that have been achieved to date. And I would suspect that the attempts to exclude many of these claimants by simply ring-fencing and saying they do not have a right to the historic District 6 could create many problems. And even if that was in place in the law, the process of negotiating that process would be enormously resource-heavy and politically challenging. The other group that I wanted to just touch briefly on is the issue of betterment claims, which has been identified as a major category of claims that were historically excluded for various reasons when the claim lodgement period was open. Again, it's my view that restitution is not the most appropriate vehicle for dealing with the considerable development challenges of the former Bantu stands. And there are both practical and conceptual problems, I think, around the way in which betterment claims are being linked and the resolution of them and the issues that accompany them are being linked to the question of restitution. Practical problems have been canvassed in different forums. The numbers of likely claims we know are huge. Millions of people were affected historically. The issue of how you verify those claims is going to be extremely difficult in many cases. But I think of greater concern is the minefield of overlapping and competing rights over time that one has to anticipate. We know it is there already in the Bantu stands. There's various studies being done, for instance, in some of the former Kutrent communities of the Siskar, showing how those original rights that were actually acquired in the colonial period have been overlaid, to which many families are strongly attached, have been overlaid with many other forms of rights, including PTOs, tenancy settlements, as well as competing claims within families of the original Kutrent descendants. But I think there are also conceptual problems with tying, seeing that the problems of rural development, of tenure insecurity, of land hunger in the Bantu stands can be addressed through restitution. My biggest concern here is that this restitution will actually be addressing these problems within the apartheid social and administrative framework that has already been given. And it does not challenge the existing Bantu stand boundaries. It may entrench the legacy of apartheid-era tribal authorities. It's a site-specific rather than holistic planning. Just briefly, as I move to conclusion, just some other concerns about the bill. The length of the claim lodgement period, it's not clear to me what the justification for reopening the process for a full 5 years is. I haven't seen the justification other than a concern to distribute and make known the process as widely as possible, but I think surely we can expect that the process of, the idea that the bill may be reopened is already in the public domain and being largely canvassed. It does not seem to me, if the process goes forward, that there's any justification for 5 years in which claims could be encouraged to come forward. I'm also concerned about, it seems to me that we are not learning enough from past experiences. I think the proposal to try and protect the status of already lodged claims that have not yet been resolved by saying that we will prioritise them while we are opening the process to new claims is going to create enormous difficulties and put enormous pressure on officials and the commission in particular. I think it's untenable. I think the experience has been that it's extremely difficult to prioritise claims, in fact, in a principled and systematic way, largely because, well, there are a number of reasons. Some claimants are much better resourced than others, but there are also so many judgments that have to be made, moral judgments, political judgments perhaps, about how to prioritize. It's not clear. And then an important point is, I think we all agree that information management, which is a shorthand for a whole lot of issues, is certainly critical, and there have been problems around this. But the idea that through sort of strong information management, IT systems, etc., you can manage the complexity of the claim lodgement and processing process, I think is actually very naive. It's not a panacea, it's very important, but the process is not a technical process. And to the extent that an information management system is essential, it really requires critically informed and ongoing and policy-driven management. It's not just an administrative task, and I think that's one of the problems that one has had in the past. I also am concerned about the proposal for a punitive handling, if you like, of fraudulent cases. I'm not saying we want to encourage fraudulent cases, but it seems to me that will in fact create many problems in prosecuting and following up on fraudulent claims, and is likely to clog up the system. And then just to make the point that I think has been made already, that the concern about overlapping claims does not just apply to already lodged restitution cases, but also to redistribution and other state programs as well. So in conclusion then, it's just to highlight what I think are some serious tensions, almost contradictions, if you like, within the policy, which I think will actually end up exacerbating many of the concerns and the frustrations that have led to the call for reopening of the process in the first place. The call for reopening is premised on claims for justice, and a moral imperative of restoration of land, which I think we all take very seriously. But at the same time, if you read the amended bill and also the policy framework that's trying to interpret this, it's also actually trying to achieve rural redistribution targets while maintaining productivity and protecting current claims and settlements. So it's setting up all sorts of tensions and clashes and contradictions. At the same time, there is a tacit recognition of the seriousness of these challenges in the policy framework that has been developed, which leads then to all sorts of proposals that actually close down on the foundational premise or promise of redress through land. For instance, the highlighting of the issues of feasibility and prioritization. So I think we're dealing with an attempt, a very flawed attempt to manage a whole lot of different claims and issues in a vehicle, the Restitution Act, that is simply not robust enough to handle it. So my view is that the thinking behind the bill and the brain which is proposed to manage these challenges is flawed with respect and acknowledging all the concerns around redress and the importance of them. And I think that the bill, therefore, should be held over till there's a far more robust and far-sighted policy framework for land reform in place. I think the bill itself hails on feasibility, if you like. If the outcome is that it proceeds with the bill in its current form, we can expect many unintended consequences, but many of which I think have been anticipated already. I think it will be important to develop and spell out in the legislation, but also the policy and the communication strategies, alternative forms of equitable redress, which is the constitutional phrase, and the circumstances under which they apply, and really try and think what other forms of redress, what can equitable redress mean in 2014 based on our experience and where we want to go. I think financial compensation should be, it is there, but I think it should be developed and thought about as a viable option in different circumstances, not as a panacea, but also as a viable option. I think there should be a delay of the reopening of the process for all current claims with respect, where land is at stake, have been settled. I think the lodgement period should be seriously reduced. I'm suggesting 1 to 2 years at maximum. I think 6 months would not work, even if one wanted it to. And then my final point is just that I really think we should be at a point where we are not looking to restitution to solve all of land reforms or indeed rural development challenges as a part to play, but it cannot carry the weight of expectations that are currently being placed on it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Prof. I'm going to allow honourable members who have questions to pose them before we break for lunch. Any takers? I'm sorry.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. But several questions were asked, first of all, the first question would be asked to Lamosa. Lamosa, with regard to the issue of the CPA and the traditional leaders, they actually indicated here that the people should be respected. So I just want to know, what about those people who actually think that the CPA is not actually treating them well, but they could be served by the traditional leaders? I just want to find out from them what do they think with regard to that, because in some areas people are divided. How the other question is actually addressed to Mkingantaba Kandoda, Mr. Java. Mr. Java here actually referred to other submissions, like referred to the Agri-SA and the DA, that they are actually not consistent in what actually they are saying. I just want to find out, is it wrong for another organization actually to present their own views? Is it not, is that not constitutional? Because I believe that every party has got its rights and their views. But is it wrong for the DA and for the other organization actually also to present their views? Or are you also suggesting that Parliament must not actually accept views from other organizations, as you just indicated in your presentation? My last question, Professor Mini, is to Professor Horn with regard to the time frame. Professor proposed that the 5 years is too long. Then they were proposing that the opening of lodgements could be restricted to 1 year. So I just want to find out that if people failed to accelerate to lodge at least in 5 years from 1994 to 1998, is it possible for those who the new claims to lodge at least in 1 year if the people failed in 5 years? I just want to find out from there. Thank you very much.
Any further questions? Honourable Tanya.
Chairperson, I'm going to refer my question to Professor Walker. The committee has been engaging the public since last year, and I think the view of the people, most especially the people that are disposed, is that what we are doing, we need to improve, most especially on this bill. we need to improve and take their submissions into consideration. And for them, land is something that is very, very valuable, and they want to get their land back because that's what they've been denied all along. They're not able to grow, they're not able to have that pride of being the previous owners of the land. And for them, being not able to get enough time to engage with the previous process, it shows that most of them are not able to lodge their claims. And for them, this period that is on the bill is just too short. And they want us to sort of give them enough time to do that. And I mean, some of them were indicating that at least 20 years, so that it gives the government enough time to engage with the people, to engage with the people that lost their land. And we went around the country getting the same inputs over and over again, most especially on the time. And I don't think it's fair for us to, you know, just try to cut them short, because most people are not able to get information on time. Most people are not able to do submissions like most people that are literate. So is it not fair for the process to be expanded to that period that people are asking? Because this is the government that represents the people, and those people need to be heard. Their voices need to be heard. And the second one is to say that in as far as the very same people are concerned, the other options that are mentioned here, they are not an alternative to them. The one that then the other processes that the government is engaging on has not succeeded at all. The alternatives have not bear any fruit for them. So what they want is land. So don't you think that it would be unfair on them to be given an opportunity of getting to other programs of government that has not yielded any fruit for them? And my second one is for sorry, Chairperson. Can I come back on that one and trace it correctly, Chairperson? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity to engage this conversation. So, Chair, mine it will be the AgriSA, because AgriSA said actually they said it clear that they don't want this reopening of a land claim. But I'm a little bit worried, Chair, about what they said, because we are reopening, the government is reopening this claims because of the people outside crying about to say they were left behind about the claims who in the 2008 in 98. So I want to remind them that they must remember that people they were forcefully removed in their land, so that people they want land. Because they don't have nothing. When they were forcibly removed, now they don't have nothing. They have become a vulnerable of poverty. Because land, it was a thing that giving them strength. So I think they must think again about this. Because if you don't have land, you are nothing. So people, they want their land. I want to concur about my colleagues who said
some people, they were telling us that even if we can open for 20 years, can fight. Because they are thinking about those who do not being in our public hearing, who do not knowing. Now we are starting to reopening for the land, for the claim land. So I think to reopening this land, we are giving many people of South Africa an option or a window to come and reclaim and claim their land. Because some of them, they were thinking that government left them behind, because some of them, they were crying about those who selling their land to the government. And they were keep on asking us that why government is buying their land, why this land they were taken free of charge. But we told them that as a democratic government, we do things because of the law. We can't just go back and correcting wrong with another wrong. Because to remove people forcefully, it was wrong. So now we are doing a right thing as government to say, let's come together and talk about this. Because there was before there was a Congress of in Gibson. That Congress launched a freedom charter. He said people shall share. Which means it seems that there is some people who don't want to share the land with other people. Through you, Chair, thanks for giving me this opportunity to engage this AgriSA about this. This is the land of people. People, they want their land. They want to do what they want to about their land. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, thank you. Mine won't be a question. It's just a comment. My comment will firstly go to the Griqua chief. I just wanted to say that this government is so serious, and it has taken the Khoisan into consideration. That's why we are sitting here today. I think last year during the Swana, the president himself of South Africa announced this. So this is part of it. This is to show that this government is really very much serious about people that were left behind then. And he even mentioned the Khoisan. So I just want to say, you need to relax. This government will be taking you somewhere. So you need to be relaxed on that one. You are taken very much seriously. And I think the other one my colleagues have alluded to, we've gone right around South Africa. We've got the input of all the people of all the provinces. So what is only left is to take all inputs together and just implement. Because this is what the South Africans want. They want to share in the wealth of this land. It's implementation time. 1955, as my colleague has said, the Congress of the People said that the people shall share the land amongst them, those who worked it amongst them. The people shall govern. So this time is implementation time. 2018 is the set date. And we are not going back. We are going forward, Jefferson. We are not going back. We're all going to share this land, this beautiful land of us. We have, everyone has to have his piece of this land. That's the mandate that we are given by the people of South Africa. I thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, Jefferson. I will address my two professors, the representative of Agri SA, Mr. Jaha, as well as Mr. Lafleur. You have made some scientific inputs that is very, very difficult to ignore. I will ask this question and try to touch on your responsible side by asking, seeing the condition that South Africa is in now, while we have consulted many provinces, we could see it is impossible to turn back. The first question is your intellectual capacity that you have. Will you remain a partner with the government to try to address this land question, because it is a problem? People out there want their land. If we are not going to address it in an organized way, as Parliament is trying to do now, people will address it themselves. They don't want to wait any longer. So we are in tough times. That's my question. Mr. Lafleur, as we have been traveling South Africa, we have heard the plea and the plight of the Khoisan people. It is the first time that I hear that very early when negotiations started, that you have tried to address this problem. And then, there's, even now, there's a more greater responsibility that lies on your shoulders and those who are working together with you. You have asked in a very modest way to be taken more seriously and for your points to be considered. And I'm grateful for all the other points that were made. I think it was Mr. Jaha's group that attempted to seize, or rather try to seize some justice being done. But I want to say, when we change a law or we address it or amend it, it can be done more than once. But for this round, we are asking your cooperation, and furthermore, we ask you or request you to stay with Parliament and to help us see everything through until all people may be satisfied. Thank you, Jefferson.
You managed to find your last question.
Yeah, thank you, Jefferson. My last one is to Agri SA. I think the government is also concerned about production. The government is concerned about food security. And that's where it came up with all the programs that we're trying to ensure that production does not go down. And the main problem was that, as you have indicated, most farmers were unsure of what is the future holding for them. And the same goes to the very same people that were dispossessed. And in most cases, farmers were not able to assist. And the government, now with the CAP process, is trying to ensure that the beneficiaries are given the capacity to produce. They are being trained, they are being mentored by the most experienced farmers. But the problem is that those that are not coming on board to ensure that production does not go down. Because these people, even if they were farmers previously, even if they know how to farm, the experience is not there. So the government is trying to get the farmers to come on board and ensure that all the land that has been cleaned, the production does not go down, people are able to be trained so that by the time the mentors are able to depart, then the people are able to continue. But what you have indicated is that at the present moment, most of the farms that we're given have been stripped of most of the things. I've been to Maruba's proof. I know exactly what you're talking about. My question to you specifically is to see, what is it that you want to bring on board to ensure that the same thing doesn't happen with this process that is going to reopen? And what is it that you can do to ensure that even those that can still be salvaged, Agri-SA, the farmers, are able to take these people on board? Because we need each other. We need to ensure that we don't take South Africa down when we try to address the past injustices that happened. So we need to work together. And I think this is the process that wants to put the people in their land, but at the same time ensure that there's productivity. Productivity doesn't go down. The nation is being fed. We don't have to rely on foreign imported food. We need to have our land that is very fertile, that can be able to feed South Africans. But we need to work together. We need cooperation. Thank you, Chairperson.
One more question, Lorosati.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, actually, as I indicated, that I've got so many questions, but specifically, I forgot actually to raise this question to Mr. Jawa with regard to the issue of conditions, because he was saying that there must be no conditionality over the right to restitution. But my question is that if there must be no conditions, Mr. Jawa is saying that people must just be given land and the government must not monitor what those people are doing with that land. And is that actually going to give us food security in that context? That's why I just want to find out. And why if the conditions are not needed, but people need government to give them support? What is that support for if they are not going to, you don't want them to the government to have a condition in terms of giving those people land back? And my other question is with regard to the finance. You indicated that the government must find money, the treasury. It is 2.4.3. You are saying a special mandate to the national treasury to allocate all required fiscal resources for restitution fund. It's a special priority until the restitution claims are addressed. But the issue is, where is the government going to find this money? Are you saying that the government must take money from other departments and fund only this restitution? What will the country actually head to? Because there are so many, the budget is being divided in terms of different departments. Are you saying that the government must take all the money from other departments and only fund land restitution or land reform? What about the other priorities that people want? Because people, not everybody is actually looking into this land reform. There are so many programs that government is running. Are you saying the government must take all the money? Because there is an estimation of about 127 to 129 billion rand that must be utilized on this program. Where do you suggest this money must come from? Thank you very much.
Thank you. At the end of your responses, I would also prefer the commission to make some remarks, some comments. Let me start with Lamusha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Swartje, for your question. The issue of the traditional leaders and the CPAs. People, as you said, may say the CPAs are not serving them well. I am a beneficiary of a CPA, and I'm also the secretary in the committee of the CPA, and I'm also in the management committee of the CPA in Boom Plus, and we're serving our people well. Lamosa, as I said, is a federation of communities in the old Transvaal. Lamosa have embarked on bringing together the chiefs, traditional leaders, Madona, the headmen, with the communities and the localities. Even in my community, we ended up talking, coming to a consensus and agreeing that even the chief is the beneficiary. Sorry to talk in Beji so that I first. I will give you an example. Hamasha in Sikukuni. The traditional house was in the forefront. But the people also said, no, because we are following the new dispensation of democracy. And within the land reform process of restitution or redistribution and Kenya security, the then ministers and the then government came up with a process of the different CPAs to become legal entities, to be able to administer and manage their own land affairs. The issue of the traditional leader, it will depend with the CPA. The traditional leader may become an ex-officio. The traditional leader will be the custodian of culture and the diploma. He has his own task. So as Lamosa, we have engaged Contra Lesa. Sitamurabu Tobejani knows very well, he has been to our workshops trying to get the chiefs together to understand this process, this new democratic process of land reform, how it goes, so that there are no fusions or tensions between the community and the traditional house, and also within the process of getting back the land through CPAs, etc. Recently, I don't want to take your time, Mr. Chen. Recently, it's in the pipeline, I don't want to spill the beans so much. We are in partnership with some experts. And they also are in partnership with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. I will mention the name later, not now. And we have CPH. We are doing a pilot project.
Honorable Lamosa, please keep your answers brief and
okay.
As the questions were raised, let's not make other presentations.
Okay. Please. We have a program where we are going to engage the traditional houses, everybody, the beneficiaries within the CPAs, but the leaders will be capacitated in coming together and also doing their own management, doing their own administration within the land together, and also not forgetting to work together with the municipalities and the local government. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. We are going to pray for lunch just for 30 minutes, if you allow. No, maybe I shouldn't ask you to allow. I must just say we're going to pray for 30 minutes. And come back, we'll take Professor Hall, Mazibu Kuchaka, Professor Walker, Agri SA. Required there a comment. I think it was just a comment. There was no direct question as far as I understood. And yeah, that will be the line that will follow immediately when you come back from lunch. So at least if you can be here by 2, it will be very much helpful. And please, even if you have done your presentations, we will appreciate if you come back after lunch. Thank you.
Well,
when
the line is just outside.
Mm-hmm.